behind every great beer is an even better story. Welcome to the Beer Healer Interviews. A few years ago, if you were going on a trip to Canberra, it was probably for work, or you were 13 years old and doing the stock standard school trip to the nation's capital. But times have changed. Well, sort of. I think Canberra is still maybe Australia's porn capital, but they're also quickly gaining a reputation for fine food and now fine beer. One of the breweries leading the charge is Bent Spoke Brewing. It was founded by Richard Watkins and Tracy Margrain in 2014, and after small beginnings, they are now regarded as one of the finest in the land, with many awards in their mahogany show cabinet. And for the third year in a row, their magnificent Crankshaft IPA was awarded third place in the Australian Hottest 100 Craft Beers. Before Richard founded Bent Spoke Brewing, he was at the helm of the iconic Wigan Pen. He's been brewing professionally for somewhere near 25 years, so he's seen a thing or two in this game we call craft beer. He might even have a story or two for us. So welcome to the Beer Healer Interviews, Richard Watkins.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks very much for having me on.
It's a pleasure, mate. 25 years or thereabouts in the game, is that right?
That's right, yeah. So I had a sort of an interesting start to things. I grew up in Newcastle and then went to Sydney to university and decided I just wanted to do mathematics and psychology, funnily enough. I wanted to be an actuary, and then that didn't really get a plan, or it didn't really interest me.
Because it's pretty boring?
Transferring to science, and got into a bit of biology and some chemistry, and then physics, and then that followed through to mining engineering. At that time, I started home brewing really because beer was expensive for a student, and I started brewing beer in a bedroom flat in Randwick and started selling to a few of the mates in college and bits and pieces. And
isn't that the old home brewer thing that I'm going to start home brewing because I'll save some money and no one ever does?
Yeah, that's right, exactly. And it's funny because I had a flatmate previously that at that time that was part of the Uni New South Wales hockey team, and they used to do some sort of casual labour on the pack line at the home brewery. So I went along one time because they knew I was a bit interested in it, and started working on the pack line at the home brewery, and then sort of got a full time casual role there, I guess, helping out with Chuck and the team. That was in the early 90s, 1990, 1991. I guess, you know, just being around a brewery, it's sort of, you know, I said to myself, I'd like to dream that one day maybe I could, work full time in a brewery. And mining didn't really work out for me. So I ended up getting a bit disillusioned in Sydney and left Sydney and ended up going to Canberra to visit a friend and never left. That was in 94.
Oh, okay.
Got a job cooking food in the kitchen of the Wigan Pen because there was a job going. And actually under Tracy, my now partner. So started out cooking food, then an assistant brewer position came up and I took on that, and 2 years later I was head brewer.
Oh, nice. Nice.
I was head brewer from sort of 97, 98 through to 2013.
Oh, shit. Well, all I got to say is that mining's loss was craft beer's gain, and thank you, mining, for being so boring that you let Richard come across to our side of the fence. So back in the day at the Wigan Pen when you were head brewer, I reckon you would have been seen as pretty much a trailblazer. Was it a bit of a tough sell, those sort of more flavoursome beers you were making?
Yeah, look, when I started, we were doing six beers, and three of those were hand pump real ales. House condition. We also had Cascade Pale, Guinness. We had a Cooper's now and then, Newcastle Brown, some of those beers on tap. Because people weren't just into, you know, craft beer at that stage.
Yeah, you're very early on.
Yeah, so one of the first beers I ended up brewing was a beer called – well, actually what happened was I actually put in two more taps because the owner said, well, we can't really take any beers off. And I said, well, I want to make some new beers, and the only way to do that was to put in two more taps. So we put in two more taps. And the first two beers I did was a Kolsch, a beer called Canberra Kolsch, which nice, easy drinking, quite
underrated style,
yeah,
I reckon.
Underrated style. But also it's a style where if you were a mainstream beer drinker, you'd be able to, at least have a taste and at least get it. And some people really you know, did get it and change over from what they were drinking.
And then Furphy stole your idea and just ran with it, and now everybody's bloody drinking it.
That's right. And the other one was a Belgian Blonde, which is like a wit beer, sort of like a Hoegaarden-style beer, because Hoegaarden was around at that point. And so we sort of thought, well, let's make a beer like that and put a bit of a, you know, story behind it, and off we went. And slowly but surely, we became self-sufficient. We stopped selling any other beers on tap, and then we actually stopped selling any bottled beers as well that we had in the fridge. So we pretty well became
all in,
self-sufficient on beers probably around the 2000 mark.
Yep.
And then from there, we increased the range up to 16 different beers.
Wow. And when did you start to fall in love with the more modern craft brews that you brew in these days?
Yeah, look, I'm pretty lucky to go travelling a fair bit. Got invited to go and start judging at the Australian International Beer Awards. That was in like 2001, I think it was, 2002. So, you know, like a lot of beers, a lot of breweries from the US had entered because it was the world's second biggest beer event. So it was great to see that, you know, we were judging beers and judging styles of beers that hadn't even really been made in Australia, like Russian Imperial Stouts and double IPAs and stuff like that. So that was really being able to judge at some of those awards was really a great grounding for getting some great ideas about new beers to make. And sure enough, come back to the brewery after one of those judging events and crank out some new beers.
So you were starting to brew those beers at the Wigan Pen. I wasn't sure whether maybe there was a point in time where, you know, the beers you wanted to make maybe didn't suit the clientele of the Wigan Pen, and maybe that was the start of the process of you wanting to go and do your own thing.
No, look, when I was brewing at the Wigan Pen, I learned a lot about a range of beers and what a range of beers means to a range of customers. And as much as you want to have, you know, you can still love every beer you make as a brewer, but you've got to have a range of beers that appeals to a range of people. And having a good Kölsch or having a good Pilsner, they're good, tricky beers to make. There are good styles of beer, but they're beer styles that do appeal to a range of people. So it's great to go into a pub and you see 22 IPAs on tap, but ultimately it's a much shallower clientele base that you're gonna grab, and I think you've got to always have a good range of beers that can appeal to quite a wide group of people, because you've obviously got the people that are already converted, you've got the people that are sitting on the fence, and then you've got the people you want to jump onto the fence. So we made some really interesting beers at the Wigan Pen, you know, well before our time. We were, you know, equal with Brad Rogers from Matilda Bay and Brendan from Ferrell in being the first brewery in Australia to make sour beers and really start to think about what beers in barrels meant. And obviously Russian Imperial Stout, pretty confident Wigan Pen was the first brewery to make one of those in Australia. Certainly in the post-1990 era, I mean, obviously back in the 1800s, there are lots of breweries around, and I'm not sure whether a brewery back then maybe had made an Imperial Stout. Maybe they didn't plan to, but they did. But that's not sure about that. But certainly in 1994, there were only like six small breweries in Australia, and certainly there was no one making Imperial Stout then.
So can I refer to you as a forefather of craft beer then?
Oh, I guess I've been around. Yeah, I think I'm longest current craft brewer.
Okay.
I mean, I still brew beer, still involved in the brewery, still, you know, jump up on the brew deck and brew beer.
Yeah, cool.
You know, every week. So I don't think
I'm going to give it to you.
Anyone older than me brew, still brewing beer in Australia.
Forefather's a mouthful though, so we'll just call you Double F. So, Double F, when you opened Benspoke in 2014, it was a brew pub, if I'm correct in my research. But how early on in sort of the beginnings there did you think, oh, shit, I think I made a mistake, I need to go bigger? Was it maybe the first weekend or somewhere not long after?
Look, we always had a bit of a plan there. I mean, we maybe didn't tell everyone the plan, although if you knew about the pub and you'd been into the brew pub, you should have put two to two together, because we actually got – it's a really unique situation. We actually came on site at the brew pub when they were actually building the building. So we started building the brewery in the building when they were actually building the six-story building.
Oh, right.
And so we got lots of opportunity to strengthen slabs and create voids and, they built the building 300 mil taller for us because we needed – you know, to think strengthen the slabs on the ground and first floor to allow for the brewing equipment, the weight of the brewing equipment and some of those yep. type of things. But we also came on site when they were pouring the concrete for our first floor slab, and we put can lids underneath the reinforcing. So when you're downstairs and you look up at the ceiling, you can see can lids poking through the concrete because it's in the drawer. And if you put two and two together, you sort of would have figured, well, hang on, how come you got can lids here and you're not...
Can lids already.
Yeah, so we always had a plan sort of to 3 years down the track we would look to try and can our beer. We probably thought we could do it on the site we are now, which was probably quite a silly thing to think about in the past, but you've always got to have a dream. But the brew pub is perfectly set up. It's the brewery's perfect for the brew pub. It's a 240 person capacity, and we sell, you know, thereabouts 3,000 litres a week. And the brewery is perfect for supplying the brew pub with beer. So all the beer that we sold in the brew pub is made in the brew pub. We're self-sufficient. Even okay. the crankshaft that we sell in the brew pub is actually brewed in the brew pub. We don't bring in beer from the production brewery.
It's cool.
We might do if we're going to run out, but, you know, 99% of the time the beer in the brew pub is brewed in the brew pub. And that's really important. I want people to walk through those doors in the brew pub, and I don't want them to look up at our beer signs and go, I wonder which beers are brewed here and which beers are brewed at the other brewery. So people have
authentic
confidence when they come in that the beer is brewed at the tank yeah. they can see.
I like that. I talked to lots of guys who are thinking of starting breweries, you know, over the last 10 years or so. And I mean, that's always been my thing, is the brew pub model for me. It may take longer to get there because you've got to eventually have that second venue like you have. But the brew pub model just sort of helps in so many different ways with getting a business off the ground, doesn't it?
That's right. And I've been a big believer for a long time. There's only two models at work. You're really, really small and you have a brew pub. And then, or you're super big, you know, you can really put in a big production brewery, and you can actually make money off selling beer wholesale, because it's quite a hard game selling beer wholesale. Yeah. And once you have one of those two models, then you can do whatever other model you want. But as long as you yep. have one of those two models, you'll run a healthy business.
Yeah, there's a lot of space in between those two, isn't there, as well?
That's right. And I think that's where a lot of people get caught, and then people get caught in the middle of trying to be a wholesale brewery off a smaller brewery and not making any money out of selling a keg. And then, you know, the whole excise thing pops up and people start whinging about all the tax that they've got to pay. And, you know, it really comes down to having the right business model from the start.
Hey there. Thanks for listening. I'll get you back to the podcast in just a sec. But first, I need a favour, please. There's a link in the show notes as well as on my Facebook page for a quick 2-minute survey. I just want to make sure that these podcasts are something that you, the listener, really want to hear. And the best way to do that is to find out a bit more about you with a survey. It's really quick. I just want to know a few things about you and where you live, as well as give you the chance to tell me what you like or don't like about the Beer Healer interviews. All survey responses go into the drawer to win a mystery beer pack. Thanks for your help. Now back to the podcast. Now, back on those cans, obviously that was part of the reason why you put together the second site. Whose idea was it to go with those wide mouth cans? Because they were a little bit controversial, weren't they?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we'd been over in the US sort of in 2012 and seen those cans and enjoyed the beer from them. And I think that was the thing that we were always about, was making sure that whatever we did, people could, you know, have the best experience, you know, with the beer. And I think these wide mouth cans really allow you to enjoy the beer out of the can. And, you know, you can see the beer, you can smell the beer. Some people find them hard to drink out of. I don't find them hard to drink out of. I think they're just like a cup, really. And, you know, I think that's really important, that you can have a really good beer experience actually drinking the beer out of the can.
Oh, well, I'm drinking out of a Maui Brewing Co. Can-shaped glass right now, and to me it's quite a similar sort of experience.
Yeah, that's right, exactly.
When you went with the canning line, like, that's a big investment. Was there a few sleepless nights around that?
Yeah, look, we obviously jumped in after a year of having the brew pub instead of waiting for 3 years. We had so many people wanting our beer outside the four walls of the brew pub, so we decided to brew pub was going really well, and we just decided to, yeah, to increase the mortgage, so to speak, and get another site. And me and the business partner really decided that we wanted something smaller, but Tracy really fell in love with the cannery where we are now, and it's a really big site, and Actually, now when you look back at it, we would have been crazy to think we could have existed in a smaller site. But
so my wife always tells me women know best.
Yeah, well, that's right. And so yeah, we set up the cannery, and we had this plan where we were gonna this is what we did right at the start. We brewed the beer. We got some double size tanks out at the cannery, and we were brewing beer in the wort in the brew pub. We were putting it on the 15 hectolitre tank on the back of a ute and bringing it out to Mitchell and transferring it into the tank out here. Then the truck would go back, or the ute would go back, pick up the next brew. And we thought, oh, well, look, we've got three big double tanks out here. We'll be right. We'll be able to do, you know, 400 cartons a week. Who's going to buy 400 cartons a week, you know? And so we had this crazy idea. We were going to still keep brewing in Braddon and bring the wort out, ferment it out at the cannery. And then we got a little 30 can a minute canning line, and thought, oh yeah, great, we can pack out one of these tanks in 4 hours, set up, pack down, it all fits in nicely, let's just have a go at it. And we soon realized that we weren't going to be able to keep up with this, because the demand for our beer just increased.
Such a demand.
So the plan was to actually put a pub in out at the cannery, and we actually spent a lot of money on setting up, putting in a lot of things, doing a lot of hydraulic work and stuff to set up the pub. And then the third stage was always going to be to put in a bigger brewery out here. But we had to suddenly skip the pub and put in the bigger brewery. So we set up the bigger brewery first. And once you start on a bigger brewery, all you do is keep buying stainless, really. So that's what's happened. We hope to get a pub out here. We actually got that on one of our goals to get done this year. I know we've said that just about every year, but it's probably more of a reality this year than any other year, because we've actually learned about the space we've got and how to exist as a production brewery and a pub as well.
Sorry to interrupt the podcast. In the words of Transvision Vamp, I don't want your money, honey. I want your love. I'm not going to ask for a Patreon donation, because that's not really why I do this. I just want you to help me spread the craft beer gospel. Whichever podcast service you use, if you like my interviews, please like, subscribe, follow, rate, and share my podcast with your friends. It all helps to spread the craft beer message throughout the community, and in turn, hopefully can help those of you out there who make a living working in the industry. That's all. I'll let you get back to the podcast. Well, let's talk about those beers now. I mean, how do you describe your personal style of brewing and the different liquids you produce?
Oh, look, I think we try and do things a little differently. You know, we take the historical style and then have a good look at it and go, all right, what are we going to do to do it a little differently without destroying it. And I think the way we go about dry hopping and the amount of hopping that we use certainly is quite different to a lot of other breweries. There certainly are breweries in the US that are similar now, but or are similar. I shouldn't say now, but you know, they've been around longer than Ben Spoke. But I think the volume of hops that we use and other breweries now use is something that sort of dictates our flavour profiles on certain some of our beers. We don't over hop all our beers. All our beers, but certainly beers like Crankshaft and Sprocket and Cluster 8 and Red Nut and those beers, we certainly use a lot of hops in those beers and really back ourselves to get that flavour out of the hops and deliver something that's, on the higher end of the hoppier side of beers.
Speaking of hops, have you changed the way you've hopped your beers over the last sort of 10 years? You know, I've been having a lot of chats lately with Dave Padden and Ben Miller on the other part of this podcast, where we sort of talk about some of the brewing techniques, mostly so I can learn how to brew decent beer. And they were saying, you know, like the hopping and the way they do it these days has changed a lot. You know, a lot of those, you know, put your first hops in to get the bitterness straight up has changed to almost becoming towards the end of the brew with this bloody haze craze. Have you sort of seen that as well?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I started doing a lot of different dry hopping probably 15 years ago, and that was sort of led to us winning a few awards, and that sort of led to me finding a really good way to dry hop. And that was sort of this whole hop creep thing sort of was around a long time ago, but nobody really knew about it. I guess it's sort of come to light a lot more now, and it's obviously evident that you can manage your hop creep through the way you dry hop. And certainly dry hopping a lot earlier in the fermentation is certainly an advantage, and you can get a lot of different other flavours from that. And I think that's something that now a lot of breweries are doing. more regularly than they once were, for sure.
Yeah, fair enough. Do you have a favourite of your beers at all?
No, if I didn't like it, I wouldn't make it. I mean, I want to make, as I said earlier, I want to have a range of beers. I want to like every beer we make. I want to be able to, you know, some beers we make, you might have one of. Some beers we make, you might be able to have a few of. But I want to like every beer we make. I want to hang my hat on the hook and say, look, I like every beer we make. Because if you don't like every beer you make, you sort of got to question what your ethics are and why you actually want to make a product.
You
know, and I think the best part of being a brewer is being able to, you know, is to be able to make something that you're really proud of and you put a lot of effort into, but then you also put a smile on someone's face, make someone make someone happy. And I think that's one of the best things about being a brewer. And I don't think I'd feel right about putting a smile on someone's face if I didn't like it, like what they were drinking.
Yeah, well, that question was just pretty much a pathetic attempt at a segue on my part, because I wanted to talk about Australia's favourite brew of yours being that the Crankshaft IPA, that ripping West Coast IPA that placed third for the third year running in the Hottest 100. Mate, I was sure you were going to get number one this year.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't actually. I've we've followed this competition obviously since pretty well its inception at the Tap House, and it seemed like, early on, when it first started, the brewery Stone and Wood had really only just started up, you know, and so they had this great, you know, I don't think people realise how groundbreaking they were back in the day of starting up a brewery to make a beer like Pacific Ale, and everybody seems to rubbish it now, but certainly in sort of the crafty beer circles or groups. But realistically, this beer has paved the way for essentially 600 other breweries to open up in Australia, really.
Absolutely.
Drinking something different. And and I think they started at this time when there weren't a lot of other breweries, and they really, you know, and good luck to them, but they also able to capitalise on that and be and have so increase their fan base every year. And I think that's what we're seeing. We're seeing how powerful Stone and Wood are in the beer community, because they have so many fans that are just so religious about drinking Pacific Ale, and that then themselves voting for a Pacific Ale. And I don't see their result changing. Obviously, Bolter came along, and Bolter did two things really well. They made really good beer. You know, Scotty really churned out some really great beer at the, you know, now and at the start. But then they also marketed and were allowed to market themselves really well as well. Obviously, having, you know, the guys, the boys, they had a really good team from the start, and they really market themselves really well. And that really, really showed up, I think, how shallow our marketing, how marketing is a part in a lot of
100%,
including Ben's Bake. Like, we've done okay, but when you compare us or other breweries to Bolter, I mean, they've just done so well with that. But you've got to obviously have, first and foremost, you've got to have a really good product. And then if you do the marketing side of it really well and have really good growth at the same time, which is what Bolter achieved, that's why they're sort of, those breweries are one and two.
Yeah.
So I think then we sort of go into the pack. Look, I don't know the answer here, but I'd imagine that number one and number two would have been, they would have been the majority of the votes. And whether there was a big gap or a small gap between one and two, I can say without argument, I think, that there would have been a really big gap between two and three and three and four. And, you know, well, maybe not three and four, but between two and three, there would have been a big gap. And then there would have been a lot back to the smaller gaps for the rest of them, really, because there's really no other, you know, there is really no other brewery that really can really compete with their fan bases that they've got.
And they've
earned those fan bases. They're not, like, I'm not complaining about it. I think it's a really great thing for craft beer. Every time someone drinks a Pacific Ale or a Bolter XPA, it's a chance that they might actually drink a Crankshaft. So it's great. It's great.
Absolutely. For them. Yeah.
What I was saying about the awards is, I think I've seen a lot of, what usually happens, a lot of breweries sort of come in, have some really good years, and then because there's so many new breweries opening up and coming in, that they get then swamped by newer breweries that are coming. And I think what we've seen this year is we've seen sort of quite a few breweries sort of hold their position, which is, to me, is actually really surprising, us included. Like, we held our, you know, we held our position, Bridge Road, Young Henry's, you know, Hop Nation, You know, the rest of the beers have pretty well filled out the top 10. Sort of, they sort of roll around that. I mean, your mate's Larry, I guess, is a you know, a newcomer in there, but they did well last year. You know, I guess that's a beer that is probably bucking the trend, I'm saying, but good luck to him. That's always done really well. Yeah. And look, to be honest, there's no reason why it couldn't, you know, go further next year.
Well, when you're talking about the marketing and all that sort of stuff, you know, one of the things I think that stands out with Bolter is their humour in what they do and the fact they don't take things too seriously, and that all comes from Sterling, and I've seen him do it in the past with his ads for Nimble. I think in some ways Larry is like a sort of trying to follow a little bit in their footsteps. Sorry, your mates are trying to follow in their footsteps a bit because they have a similar kind of, you know, just cool, just take it easy, bunch of mates, no stress kind of vibe about them.
Yeah.
Don't quite have the same humour, but I think they're sort of heading down that path as well. So maybe.
Yeah. So, you know, like I think, sure, we had a lot of new beers come into the top 100 this year, and that's really good to see, really, really great to see that there's some, you know, refreshing new beers that people are really passionate about coming in. And then obviously we balance that out with, you know, with the beers that have sort of got a decent sort of fan base and have made a bit of a, you know, a bit of a niche in the Australian craft market.
And six out of the top 100 for you blokes, like that's fantastic, I reckon.
Yeah, it is. It absolutely is. It shows that we make a good range of beers, which is, I think, yeah. I'm really proud of as a brewer. You know, to have that, you know, six different beers. And I might add that another Canberra Brewery Capital also had six different beers, so that's something.
That was going to be my next point. Yeah,
coming good in the Canberra water.
Yeah. I was really surprised that you got the ACT had 12. Obviously, the whole beer scene up there is in good hands with yourselves and Capital. What are the other sort of brews around town like? There's a few popping up now, are there?
Not really. Actually, we've had Zierholz. Premium Brewery been around for a while now. They're a German sort of inspired brewery. They're doing their thing. And that's really been about it. We've had a couple of contract brands open up, but we haven't really had someone really, you know, put their hand up and sort of commit to putting in some stainless and actually starting a brew pub or a brewery.
Yeah. What is it like? Are you the godfather of the town? You know, I've got visions of you with the big ring on, people coming to kiss the ring, asking for permission to get a tap point or open a brewery or whatever.
Oh, I don't think it's quite like that. I'm really passionate about you know, people getting into beer. The more breweries that open up, the better it is for everyone. You know,
nice.
The people always ask me, is Capital competition for you? And I sort of tell them that, you know, we sell more beer because Capital's around, and Capital sell more beer because we're around. So, you know, it is. It's sort of grown. The craft market is still so low. You know, it's 7% of the beer market or whatever it is. It's, you know, we've got to stop worrying about competing in the 7% and start trying to compete in the 93% part.
Yeah.
And if we can slowly just even grab another percent or 2% on that, there's not enough stainless steel tanks in Australia to make another 2% of craft beer.
That's a really good way of looking at it. Obviously, you're in a small market, and another great segue by me, speaking of small markets and pioneers within them, one of the original craft brewery venues down here in Hobart is a pub called the New Sydney Hotel. Have you ever enjoyed a beer there?
Well, actually, I can go further than that.
Oh, don't steal my thunder. Don't steal my thunder. I thought this was true because the reason why I asked the question is that they, I think the only venue down here that has a thing called a hopinator, and I think that it might be partially your invention. Is that right?
Yeah, definitely. I definitely came up with that. You know, obviously inspired by the Dogfish Head Randall, but trying to make it in a simpler way that was easier to use and could be adapted. And yeah, we definitely came up with that when I was in Japan, and we sold them to Mountain Goat. Mountain Goat was the first one to get one. The little brewery in Theverton, the hotel in Theverton with Jade and the friends in Adelaide. Anyway, I can't remember the name of that. I should remember. It'll come to me. We sold one to both the tap houses and to Sail and Anchor over in Perth, and then one to the New Sydney Hotel.
Yeah. I've had some great beers off that. Bloody hell. We've shoved some strange shit into it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, that's what it's there for. It's about a talking point as well, and it's about trying new things. It's not really designed to chuck something in it and run VB through it. It's more designed to, you know, to experiment with a pale ale or a fruit beer or a beer and add some fruit to it or a pale ale and add some fruit to it as well and see what flavors it can be, you know, how they work in the with the hop profile or the malt profile of the beer.
Well, it's you that I can thank for having my Junior Randall in my cupboard down here because I bought that once I saw the Hoppinator at the New Sydney and then realized it was based on the Randall at Dogfish and then, bought one of those for myself. So thank you, mate.
Yeah, no worries.
As I said before, it's been 25 years, so surely that's not the only crazy beer invention or a fad or a trend that you've witnessed. Any others that you can think of?
I have to think about that a little bit. I mean, I think one of the things was always about hop flowers and hop backs, and that was sort of one of the reasons why we sort of did that Hoppinator was to try and use good flowers, and they became more and more available in Australia. And I think breweries that use flowers in Australia, you know, certainly living closer to the hop growing regions, you can really benefit from you know, using flowers. We do quite a few different flowered beers, hop flowered beers when they're available, when they first come out of with the new season. And that's something that I really, really interests me. You really get different flavors out of, say, Galaxy flowers than you do Galaxy T90 pellets. But I think the thing I'm really into at the moment is the lupulin and the cryo hops over in Yakima and in Washington State and seeing how all that works and the power of these cryo hops. We use a lot of them.
Can you explain what the cryo hop is? Because I've got a package from Yakima Chief Hops with me right now that John Burridge gave to me, and it's got on the front of it in blue like cryo hops. And I was like, oh, what's that?
Yeah, so what they do is to make a T90 pellet, they simply just grind up hop flowers with all the vegetal matter as well and then bind it all together into a pellet. And during that process, you do get some damage to the lupulin balls or the oil balls that are in the hop flower. And so the cryo part is what they do is they effectively freeze the hop flower and shake out all these balls and then bind all the lupulin balls together. So you've got 100%, effectively 100% lupulin in a pellet. So you've really got a real strong, hop oil pellet. And you're not getting the vegetal matter. Now, some brewers think that you've got to or prefer to use some vegetal matter and some cryo. But we've done a lot of work with some varieties that is the case and some aren't. So some varieties you can actually just use 100% cryo and still get, I believe, better results than if you were using T90. And some varieties you need to use a bit of T90 to the vegetal the vegetal part actually enhances the character of the hops, not diminishing.
Okay. Every day is a school day here on the Beer Healer interviews. Let's stick with the experimentation line here, and I've been taking a keen interest lately in the art of wild ales, and I've spoken to some really creative and intelligent brewers on this podcast who are making some amazing beers along these lines. And I'm just wondering, are you about to follow in their footsteps via your Canberra Innovation Network beer?
Yeah, look, that was a really good little experiment. We actually, cultured some yeast out of the air and brewed a beer with it, and it turned out pretty well. So we'd like to take that further. We've got to such a big commitment to go into packaging with a beer like that, but we would need to have regular supply of it. So trying to get all that set up is just something that takes a bit of time.
Yeah.
Wild beers using bacteria and using nature to make the beer is certainly something that is appealing. It's certainly something that really enforces the real part of making beer, and I think that's definitely something we're looking at. I mean, we're not quite at the point where we're going to put in a cool ship and go in that path just yet. But having said that, that is the best way to do it. So ultimately, yep, that is something that I would definitely love to do.
What if you dipped your toe in the water with a collaboration?
Yeah, well, you never know. That could always be on the cards, and that's something that we'd love to do. And there's certainly some other good breweries around doing that. But yeah. It's pretty hard. Success can be, you know, it can be a lot of failings to get, you know, very few successes yep. too. You really got to be prepared to. When I was doing a lot of the barrel age stuff and using bacterias and sort of doing a little bit of cool ship stuff at the Wigan Pan, that was always, we had a really good strike rate actually. We did really well because we were doing it on a quite a smaller scale, sort of only making 500 litres at a time. But it was really, it allowed you to be really creative, but you really had to be in control of the bacteria. If you weren't in control of it, being in control of it's really a lot to do with the climate. And that's one of the good things about Canberra and a lot of the other good areas like Paris and Belgium and even some areas in the US, they make really good sours because you need the really hot weather, but you also need the really cold weather to make the best sours. You need the bacteria to go through the two different phases that it goes through, and the climate plays a really big part of that. So a lot of the good sour beer or wild beer around the world is made in areas that do have the hot temperatures through summer and then the cold temperatures through winter.
That's why Van Diemen Brewing down here in Launceston is just the best place. Such a tropical climate, Tasmania.
Yeah, Will does a really great job. Yeah.
He does. So maybe we won't see a Bent Spoke Wild Ales range just yet, but what are your plans for the year ahead? Have you got any maybe hot beers up your sleeve, collaborations, or maybe even thinking of opening up a little satellite operation in Hobart that you need someone to oversee? I don't know, maybe.
Look, to be honest right now, we sort of put, you know, just our little, you know, any sort of plans we got on hold. We're just sort of still dealing with the fires here, really. And trying to, you know, really get the community sort of back together, I suppose, and brewed this resilience beer to be part of that.
Nice.
We just supported heavily an apple farmer who lost 97% of their orchard. We actually make our own cider. We actually crush all our own apples and make our own juice and ferment our own juice. And you know, I bought these apples off this guy since 2000 when I was at the Wig, and you know, it's really devastating to see him and his family really lose such a big part of their farm, and it'll take him like 5 to 7 years to recover that amount of apple trees again.
So we're
trying to work with him at the moment. But look, we've got things in the pipeline. We've got we do want to get some new beers again out this year. We'll probably, you know, we always do our birthday beer, so that's going to be another Imperial Stout with another little twist.
Beautiful.
So that'll be coming out sort of late May.
It's soon, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, late May, early June, that'll be out. And then, you know, we've got to work on how's it goes, and our Gozer, Fruit Gozer went really well through summer, so we're trying to work out what we're going to do there again this year, whether we do the same or we do something else. The problem is once you put out a beer, everyone wants it all the time, so our core has only gone from having, you know, 4 beers in it to 10. So
it's a good problem to have, mate. So, mate, you know, in wrapping all this stuff up, you're a craft beer pioneer in Canberra. You've built up a really nice brewery of your own. You've won a heap of awards. You've collaborated with some great brewers. And obviously, as you said before then, you've been able to get involved with the community, with the fire relief, your apple farming friend. You're also sponsoring the local W League team. When you sit back and, you know, have a bit of me time at the end of the night, maybe with a birthday stout, what makes you most proud of your career to date?
Look, I think I think that the couple of things I'm proud of is I'm proud of seeing how much our industry has grown in the last 20 years. I think if I really think back to when I first started and there were 5 or 6 breweries in Australia and what we're looking at now is 650 or whatever it is, it's amazing to see how quickly our industry has grown. It's really become a sustainable industry now. It's really become an industry that you can actually set up and make a living from, because back in the day it was very hard to set up a brewery and try and make a living out of it when you really got only a small number of people wanting the product you're making, even though it's a great product. So I think that's something that's really been such a pleasure to see. But I think, you know, I think also from a personal point of view, being able to make beers that people obviously really enjoy is number one for being a brewer. It's great to make beers that the brewer likes and beers that, you know, the hoppiest beer in the world or whatever, and be able to talk about that. But I think making beers that people actually, you know, pay hard earned money to go and buy is, you know, it's actually not. It's something that shouldn't be taken for granted. And I think from a Ben Spake point of view, to see our company go from, you know, I guess starting in 2014 to now just going into its, you know, just over 5.5 years and having, you know, 87 staff, and knowing that we've got 87, you know, effectively families to feed is, you know, it's just really amazing.
Yeah, that is awesome. That is awesome. I'll leave you with the last word, Godfather of Canberra. Have you got any advice for people wanting to follow in your footsteps?
Yeah, I do. I'll go back to a few things I have mentioned earlier, and I think, you know, really important to brew a range of beers that appeal to a range of people. And I know it seems like something that a brewer should just, you know, accept and get on with, but it's not the case. There's certainly a lot of breweries out there that you go to, and I just wonder how this brewery's going to, you know, really gonna last. You can't rely on just the beer enthusiast and the bloke or the lady who likes the double IPA to keep your business afloat. You need to appeal to everyone. You've got to have a beer there that someone's gonna, you know, if they're a VB drinker, you've got to be able to give them an opportunity to try something. You know, and I think that's something that's really important. And I think also the second thing is, there's only two models at work. Have a look at history in Australia and have a look at, there's very few breweries that have started up and been able to survive that aren't part of the two models I put forward earlier. And I think it really does matter. And I think sometimes you're better off being really good at a brew pub than trying to be, you know, middle of the road in a small production brewery.
Nice words, mate. Nice words. Forefather of craft beer in Australia, Richard Watkins. Thanks for your time today, mate. Cheers to great beers.
Thanks to Chris. And, you know, it's people like Chris that really, you know, make our job as brewers a lot easier, because we really need people like Chris to talk about beer and be passionate about supporting beer, because it's fine for us to sit in our sheds and brew beer, but if we don't have people to talk about it, how are we supposed to get the word out there? So thanks to Chris and the Beer Healer for having me on the show, and but really big thanks to you, and keep talking about beer.
Oh, shucks, mate. It's my pleasure. I bloody love this. Thanks for your time. Cheers.
No worries. Cheers.
Thanks for tuning in to another Beer Healer interview. I really hope you guys enjoyed the episode as much as I did. If you want to follow along with more Beer Healer content, you can check out my Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram pages. Just search Beer Healer, or you can visit beerhealer.com. If you like the podcast, can you please help me spread the word by subscribing and rating it and sharing it with your beer-loving friends?